The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. This show's an extension, or a continuation, I guess is a better word, of the EDU show from last week. Last week, we started kind of dissecting a written article, which was based on a podcast interview that was done between a retirement planning software firm called Bolden and Robert Merton, the Nobel Prize-winning economist. And Robert Merton was kind of sharing again in this format. We've seen him talk about this same retirement planning philosophy in the past as well, but he was reiterating to this company on this podcast about his three-bucket approach, his three-bucket retirement income framework, I guess is how they're referring to it in the article. By the way, this article is entitled Nobel Prize winner Robert Merton on why retirement income is more important than retirement savings. So if that statement doesn't make much sense to you, go back and listen to last week's show where we, you know, first dissect that claim itself. And we were digging into his three buckets. We'd covered kind of his first bucket in his terminology, which he refers to as minimum guaranteed income, which we oftentimes in our approach, that would be similar to our concept of secure income. And when he was talking about this bucket, he was, talked logically about annuities being part of what he's calling guaranteed income, what we call secure income, and how it might be a great baseline or foundation for your retirement to cover what he called his terminology, what we call minimum dignity floor, he called essential expenses or required expenses or something along those lines, which, of course, we talk about constantly on the show here as part of our minimum dignity floor concept of food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare. Now, I don't know if those are the five categories he's put into this concept on his end, but it's substantially similar. And so we'd finished talking about his thoughts on, annuity income might be another source of guaranteed or secure income. And we were just about to get into what he would call bucket two, or this article's labeling as category two here. And something I don't think we did mention that I'm just noticing in the article here is that in their annuity conversation, they made sure to call out the fact that annuities are not investments. They are actually an insurance product. And they said technically an insurance product, like there was some nuance to it, but they are absolutely an insurance product. So everyone should be aware of that while you're giving up the noun, right? The assets, the investments you might otherwise have if you turn them over to an insurance company and transform it into an annuity, you now have an income stream instead. No longer a batch of invested assets. So, be clear, those are apples and oranges. Both fruit helping you in your retirement journey, but certainly quite different. So that should get us up to speed for where we were getting ready, wanting to launch off today into bucket number two, which he's labeling or calling conservatively flexible income. So as opposed to bucket one being guaranteed income. So conservatively flexible to cover the next group of expenses he refers to. And I'll bring Jim in, and I'm sure he's just itching after my 5-minute intro here to say something. This has been a long time with him sitting silent. So I apologize for keeping you quiet for so long, Jim.
I'm very reserved. I could sit here for 3/4 of the show, if not 80% of the show, and say nothing.
You could.
I could. I very well could.
Usually that only happens. Don't tempt me. That only happens generally when you're not on the show.
But welcome, everybody. Chris did a good summary. I like that. Again, we posted in the show notes from last week's show a link to this article. So I don't necessarily know if Joe's going to do it again. Maybe she will, maybe she won't. But if you don't see it in this show's show notes, go to last week's EDU show. It's definitely there if you want to download this and read it and follow along. I found it interesting because Merton approaches, I like what he calls categories. He starts by calling them buckets, but then he jumps to categories. I'm glad he did. Buckets would be too confusing because it's too much like quote unquote bucketing. But Merton believes in three different pools of income. And that's kind of where we're going to go today, is what category two and category three, or bucket two, bucket three, all tied towards income. That kind of differs a bit from our approach. There is no right or wrong approach to retirement planning. I truly believe that, even though I don't care for a safe withdrawal rate, Monte Carlo probability, statistic-driven retirement plan. I don't necessarily find them wrong. They're just not the way I would want to approach my own retirement. So we're not familiar with the software firm Bolden. We don't know exactly what they espouse inside their algorithms and their methodology. So even though we are going to start to disagree with category two and three, conceptually, I understand what they're doing. And there's a lot in here that I support. And I'm not going to speak for Chris. I'm sure there'll be a lot, though, he might support. But there is a bit in here that I disagree with. Chris, did you have a chance to read this whole article, by the way? I never asked you.
Yeah, I read through, I think, the entire thing now. At this point, you gave it to me with not a lot of warning last time. But while you were talking, last week I was reading through it and read a little bit, a couple other pieces today. So I think I've got the whole thing.
Do I ever give you anything with a lot of warning?
No.
No. Most of the time. Sometimes I'm nice. But that's because most of the time I have no idea what the hell I'm going to talk about either until we start the podcast. All right. Anyways, let's jump on to number two now. So again, this is designing his income approach to retirement. Category two, they call conservatively flexible income. Their verbiage, not mine. Now I'll continue with this article. These are the expenses you really want to afford, and they accentuate the word want. You really want to afford, but could reduce if needed, such as travel, hobbies, or family gifts. Here, you want safety, but some flexibility. I'm going to pause there and say flat out, I disagree with that approach to retirement planning. Now, that's my own personal belief. It's obviously Chris's belief as well, or he wouldn't be working for the firm. Not quite sure if it's your belief or not, but I have shared repeatedly, I came up with my approach to retirement planning because I feel cutting. You think I want to cut? in my final go-go phase of my life, we're not getting younger, stronger, and healthier. People, we know how this ends. Like it or not, when you reach your 60s, you're in the last third of your life, if not the last quarter. And for some unlucky people, it might be the last 90-95% of your life. Do you think I want to approach my go-go years, which are the last years? It could be a couple, it could be 8, could be 9, I don't know how many it'll be. But my last years ever? We don't get to start over. We don't get younger, stronger, and healthier and start this whole process again. Do you really think I want to cut travel if that was important to me? Right now, it personally isn't, although I do want to go to a few places. I shared that. But do you think I'm willing to cut my hobbies? Do you think I'll sacrifice gardening or putting in a fence to keep out deer? Or going on an elk hunting trip? Or a salmon fishing trip in Alaska? These are things I like to do. Just insert those passions and hobbies of mine with whatever your passions and hobbies are. To me, any type of retirement plan that tells you, hey, I know you only got a couple of those years left, but you could cut them if you had to. Who the hell are you to tell me that? Seriously? You'll become the Debbie Downer that my father warned about.
Yeah, I'd like to add a little nuance to that, maybe, at least the way I perceive it. And that is, and I'm pretty sure Jim's in line with my thinking, just the way he's describing it might be interpreted by you all a little bit differently. Because the way I'm hearing him talk here, if I were a listener, I would say, well, gee, if that's how you're treating it, then you need to cover all these things also with guaranteed income, so that you don't have to worry about them being cut. What I think we need to add, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you're not really thinking of it this way, Jim, and that is there's a difference between your go-go period of fun, the time when you are young and healthy enough to go do things, adventures, all the things he listed with the, you know, elk hunting and the traveling and gardening and all that kind of stuff. Those are very different than maybe, you know, embellishments or fun things you might hope to be able to do later in life after you've slowed down, and that the go-go period really should be looked at as ultra important, right? Maybe not quite minimum dignity floor, because obviously putting minimum dignity floor expenses in jeopardy is just not a way to deal with retirement, right? Nobody wants to have a plan where they're worried about covering food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare. But just a little bit less important, but not much, are those go-go years. Those go-go years where people tend to want to spend enough on a lot maybe on their adventures that they've been finally waiting to do in retirement. So I think that's what we're mostly talking about here. Am I misinterpreting what you're trying to say there, Jim?
You're not misinterpreting it. Perhaps I'm a little more passionate about it than you are. But let's go back. Look at the paragraph I just read. Look at that last sentence, Chris. He's talking again about Category 2, mm-hmm. conservatively flexible income. The last sentence, here, you want safety and some flexibility.
Right.
So, and he's saying these are for the expenses you really want to afford but could reduce if needed. That's where I disagree with him. You don't. It's failure. It is failure to say, I'm not going to go on this trip because the market's down. I'm not going to go on this trip because the economy is down, or this terrorist attack happened, or this European country is going through a recession and it might bleed over to us, or the Fed is cutting rates, or whatever is going on outside of your control. That, to me, is a crucial failure in retirement. But I love that last sentence. I just disagree. I agree with its wording, but I look at it in a different context. Let me say it again. Here, you want safety and some flexibility. I would reword it to, here, you want safety and full flexibility.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, Chris.
Well, I think which you're going to get to next, when they describe what they want to use for investments in this bucket, they have the safety and they shouldn't have put the word some in there, because when they follow up with the investments that they're proposing here, you've got a lot of flexibility and liquidity in what they're proposing.
Oh, you said rhetorically, but when you were chatting, you were saying, you know, this is what I think Jim is saying, and you worded something to the effect of, I can't remember. See, I have this midlife brain farts all the time. You had said something.
I was talking about, you know, the go-go period, or maybe appropriately, the near-term spending on these things.
Oh, I know. Yep, I know where you were going with that now, where you were saying. Yeah. You said, listeners, after my little tirade, you said listeners might be sitting there and saying, well, if this fund spending is so important, why aren't you covering it? I'm ad-libbing a little bit, right. But why aren't you covering it with additional guaranteed income?
Right.
And there is a reason why. You see, minimum dignity floor, food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses, five very broad categories of expenses that will follow you around till the day you die, but they are relatively stable and easy to predict. Now, you might say, oh, what about inflation? What about inflation? I get that, folks. But what I'm getting at is you will always have, to one degree or another, a need for food. And it's not like, gee, 1 year you're going to eat like a pig, like somebody in the Nathan's hot dog eating contest and on July 4th weekend on Coney Island, I believe it is. And then another year you barely eat anything.
Right.
It stays fairly consistent. Food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare. And yes, healthcare expenses can be a little inconsistent, but for the most part, you know what your out-of-pocket expenses may be when you're on Medicare and with a full Medigap policy on top of it. So where I'm going is those expenses are easy to cover with lifetime guaranteed secure income because they stay fairly consistent with an inflationary adjustment each year, but they don't go through the variability that fun does. Fun, my elk hunting trip could easily be delayed because of a medical issue or bad weather, or my fishing trip could get delayed 1 year. Whatever, fun is hugely variable. Or I could have a buddy of mine just texted me to see if I wanted to go on another elk hunt in the fall. Mm-hmm. I haven't decided yet, but it gives you an idea of the variability of fun. So why do you want to cover fun with a steady stream of income that doesn't have the ability to say, hey, I'm taking $100,000 this year and going on this trip. I'm taking an extra $40,000 and going on not only another elk hunt, but I'm going to do another salmon trip, or I'm going to expand my garden, or I'm going to go visit my mom, or whatever it is I'm going to do. I don't want to cover fun with a steady stream of income because I lock myself into saying, oh gosh, well, no, I can't go on that elk hunt trip with you, Bill, this year. I'm going to have to wait actually two more years to save up the money because I only get a certain amount every year to spend on fun. That's where I think traditional retirement planning blows it. Whether you do it under a guardrail approach, a safe withdrawal approach, a Monte Carlo probability-based statistic thrown on top of that, big mouthful there of gobbledygook, it still means you're going to unnecessarily curtail spending on fun during the last phase of your life, your go-go phase. You hope there'll be a slow go and no-go, but there's no guarantee. Many people go from go-go to dead-go, sadly. Mm-hmm. And sadly, Chris and I have seen it quite often, quite more than we want. That's why I disagree with any type of withdrawal approach to retirement planning. And instead, yes, it's I created it, so I'm biased, and so is Chris. He's done a lot to help me refine it. But we are biased, yes. But we believe in trying to identify out of your portfolio what you can safely spend on fun, and then don't take those assets and lock them into category two, conservatively flexible income, and limit yourself to whatever they generate. Screw that. I believe in positioning and saying, hey, this is the money I want to spend on fun and go-go fun. I'm going to keep liquid, readily available, and I want X amount of dollars at any period of time if I decide to spend it, irrespective of if it's 1% of my retirement portfolio or 30% of my retirement portfolio. I know what my fund number is, and I'm going to spend the go-go fund number while I can. If none of that makes sense to you, you're a new listener, and go back to a 13-part series that Chris and I did, I think a year ago. I don't know.
It's right about a year ago.
Listen to that. That's what I wanted to clarify, Chris. Does it kind of make sense?
Yeah, and I wasn't proposing covering fun with secure income. I was just saying, as a listener, listening to the way you described it, you might have been convincing people to consider that. So I'm glad that you mentioned even another good reason not to, in that the timing of the distributions, the timing of the spending of fun is very different than minimum dignity floor expenses, which have some variability and uncertainty because, you know, medical expenses could vary year to year if you have a big event or something like that. But if you're properly insured, that smooths out quite a lot because your out-of-pocket exposure can be quite limited once you're on Medicare if you have the proper combination of coverage. Food also, like you said, you're not going to have big swings in your food consumption from year to year. Utilities as well. You know, inflation plays a part. It's going to grow, but it's not going to wildly fluctuate from year to year. Your fund budget could wildly fluctuate, and you need to be funding that with something that can handle that type of timing, right? That timing. So that was a good point that you brought up there.
That, and good. I'm glad it makes sense to you. And hopefully it makes sense to the listeners. Mm-hmm. And that's why I kind of disagree with this paragraph in category two. Expenses you really want, and they again accentuated the word want, you really want to afford, but could reduce if needed. That, sadly, is industry standard approach. I've been in this industry 26, it'll be 27 years in August. It is August. It'll be 27 years. Holy, I'm getting old. 27 years I've seen this, and that's always been the approach. You could cut your fund spending if you had to. You could cut that. As if that's a success. And that's what my dad warned me to warn you guys over. Don't be the Debbie Downer. Which is what again, Chris?
Those who still have the financial resources to have fun and enjoy themselves, but no longer have the physical ability or mental ability to do it. So they have just a big bag full of regrets that they didn't do this, that, and the other thing while they had the chance.
So they could, excellent, thank you very much. And Dad started sharing that because if you remember, he spent, many, many years in senior housing before he needed to go into assisted living and then quickly into a nursing home. But inside the senior housing, the people who lived there who had money but couldn't spend it anymore, he said, were miserable. Much more miserable, he said, than the people with no money because they spent it all. But he just called them Debbie Downers, and I share that with you. And to me, not doing something, because you can quote-unquote cut it, doesn't seem right. Not at first. That, to me, is failure. It's not like you have 30, 40 more years of active lifestyle. Everybody talks about a 20 or 30-year retirement. But you only have, depending on your age when you retire, you could have a dozen or more years in go-go, or you could have just a few, depending on your age. All right, let's continue with what they say. So that, again, they look at this as trying to now create this income pool, which that's a little bit more flexible, not as rigid as an annuity. They concede in their annuity discussion that money is gone. It's a verb now. It's a lifetime stream of guaranteed income. They feel this is a more flexible approach. Again, I disagree with it. I would rather you take your fun money and invest it in our approach of investment positioning, which we won't get into. We talked about many, many times, but keeping that fun liquid and spending to your heart's freaking content. It's a number. Here is your fun number. And you want to dedicate 30, well, 30 is too little, 50, 70, 75% of it to go-go. This is in dollars, your fun. It's right there. Just spend it. But keep it liquid, keep it relatively safe, and don't limit yourself. Just spend it. That's our belief. Okay, they continue. So for the second pool, he's saying perhaps a portfolio of TIPS can serve as a, quote, more flexible but still relatively safe, close quote, alternative to annuities, Merton said. TIPS will offer you a periodic payout of inflationary protected income for a fixed period of time. Portfolio interest income from the securities, TIPS he's talking, is combined with principal at each bond's maturity to create income payments, resulting in no remaining capital once the payout period ends. There are two advantages to this conservative additional income. Because the savings can be held in liquid U.S. Treasury assets, they are available whole or in part to the participant at any time. I will concede that, unlike an annuity, which has been annuitized. But it does not mean you're going to be able to sell that bond at an opportune time. If interest rates went up during your holding period, the principal value of your bond went down. And then you're going to be spending more bond. You have to sell more bond shares to come up with the same dollar amount. So you're still going to be exposed to that volatility. To me, when you are earmarking money to go-go, we prefer to fully protect the first 2, 3, 4, 5 years of go-go with 100% principal protected, liquid and protected. So you can access those dollars at any time and not run the risk that they've dropped in value. I'll agree with him that he's talking about the phantom income that TIPS provide, the phantom payment, if you will, the inflationary adjusted payment made to the principal balance of your TIP, which you will receive when the TIP matures. He's referencing that. But if you sell it before it matures, you could get more, you could get less than your principal amount. Do keep that in mind. Okay, and he said that these TIPS could be used for a medical emergency or other lump sum expenditures. I would prefer, again, as part of our bucketing strategy and our approach to retirement planning, is we always, before you get your final fund number, it's, hey, how much money do you want to dedicate to, we call it the buffer, emergencies? And we started probably about 6, 8 months ago now. We've shared that, might even been more than that now.
I think it's more now.
We shared on the podcast how we kind of, rather than separating out, here is your buffer and here is your aging LTC reserve, both of those reserves were fairly invested in a similar manner. We just find it easier for our clients and more intuitive to just call it the aging and buffer reserve. We prefer to have those dollars in a reserve, and then we take a small percentage of those dollars, if you're younger, and keep them very liquid, if you will, for these emergencies, but principally protected and liquid. Maybe an 100% buffered ETF, which could be sold at any time, has the full protection on the downside minus the fee of the ETF. But the upside, which yes, could be capped, but the upside could be 6, 7, 8% in any given year, depending on what the cap rate is. we kind of use a product like that, and then the rest of the aging and emergency reserves, we would rather be invested and let it grow because hopefully they're not needed at first. We keep enough in case they are needed, or at least a portion of them. But then we like the rest of those assets to be invested, not in tips. If you buy an income annuity, you just put a boatload of your money into fixed income. You don't need more fixed income. If you have your emergency buffer and your aging reserve, we'll have to get a little deeper again on a future show how we do that. We'll bring one of the juniors back on to help with that. But we try to use different areas of risk capacity. But once we feel we have enough liquidity for most reasonable emergencies, we have no problem investing the rest in the risk tolerance of the person we are helping. So those assets have a chance to grow. We're not going to lock them personally into tips, especially when we have enough lifetime guaranteed income through Social Security, pension, and income annuities. Anything you want to add before we get to category three? Desired extra income is what they call it.
No, I think we've handled category two adequately.
Okay. So again, this is their approach, not us. Nothing. If you like their approach, go for it. It's just not an approach that we fully embrace. We embraced much of what he said in the first category, the guaranteed income. So on the second, let's jump into this third category of income, Mr. Merton calls it. He says this is for your aspirational spending, the lifestyle extras. Because these aren't essential, you can afford to invest them more aggressively, such as luxury travel, second home, big gifts, philanthropy. Investments for these could be stocks, real estate, or other high-risk assets. I don't understand that logic. I'm just being honest, folks. If I don't know the difference between travel and luxury travel. To me, if you have this, oh, gee, I'd really like to, if I could in retirement, travel in a first class cabin for 2 months through, I don't know, the Caribbean. I don't cruise, so I have no idea. Well, you're going to go Mediterranean. Who's going to go to the Caribbean for 3 months? If that's an aspirational dream, I, as an investment advisor, aren't going to say, well, let's go for broke then. Go put all that money in stocks. And let's hope over the next few years you hit the ball out of the park and there's your trip. I don't particularly care for it that way because, again, if it's aspirational, do you really want to do it? Are you making it aspirational because deep down you really don't want to do it, but you love talking about it and making people think you're going to do it, but you really don't want to do it? Or do you truly want to do it? If you do, why are you going to put your money in other high-risk assets, stocks, and real estate, which is now illiquid? I don't understand that logic, but again, I don't adopt this approach. Any thoughts that you have on that, Chris?
I could see a little bit of this, maybe, just to play devil's advocate, that maybe you have your baseline travel budget, and then maybe some of your long-term reserves that you have that you, based on your planning, you can't imagine needing for another 20 or 30 years, and having those invested in such a way with kind of the mental accounting saying, you know what, if that grows, you know, if that does really well in the next few years, we're going to take some of that and we're going to fly first class instead of business class or coach, or we're going to extend our vacations. We were going to do them anyway, but we'll kind of glam them up a little bit because of that. We're not going to plan for it. We're not going to insist on it. But if it works out for these aggressively invested assets, maybe picture it as using it that way. So maybe it could fit a little bit in the way that they're talking about here.
Okay. I'll concede that. Maybe not an approach I personally would take, but many of you probably would. And Chris likes to play devil's advocate. So let's look at what they continue in the article. A smarter way to plan for retirement income, though. Merton's strategy is simple but powerful. Match the type of income to the type of spending. I kind of like that because it's very similar to what I call investment positioning, which is an offshoot of time-segmented investing, what the industry calls, quote-unquote, bucketing. I call it spending-segmented investing. To invest your portfolio, or portions of your portfolio, what we call positions, try to get you guys to understand, stop approaching your retirement portfolio through the mindset of an accumulation person. Again, the best analogy I can come up with is hiking. When you are hiking up the mountain, you use a certain set of muscles. You might use a pole or no poles. A lot of people I know don't use a pole. I use a pole up or down. A lot of people I hike with use no pole, but you'll use different muscles and different techniques. But coming down the mountain, even if it's a out and back hike and you're coming down the exact same way you went up, or it's a loop and you're just going down the other side, you're not doing it the same way. You're using totally different muscles, you're using your quads more, you're putting far more stress on your knees. More people are hurt going down the mountain than up the mountain. Any hiker will tell you that. Those who didn't use poles on the way up are pulling their poles out, opening, because most of them are collapsible, opening them and starting to use poles on the way down. You start to use your arms and hands more to balance on rocks next to you or trees as you're descending. Now, I'm talking a trail in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. This isn't a flat trail. In Colorado, as you're coming down, usually coming down through scree fields or boulders, and just, it's different. Well, so is your investments in retirement. And when you're distributing your portfolio, it's totally different. And yes, we believe in taking one big portfolio and breaking it into several smaller portfolios. Each mini portfolio, if you will, we call an investment position. Each position is earmarked for certain spending, not time segmented, not here's the first 5 years, the next 5 years, the next 5 years. That is the typical time segmented investing, 5 year quote unquote buckets. I would rather break it up and say, here is my go-go fund. Here is my slow-go and no-go fund. Here is my aging and buffer reserve. Here is my delay period MDF. Here is my post-delay period MDF. Here's my guaranteed inheritance for the very few people that are out there who need to absolutely, positively guarantee an inheritance, usually to a disabled child. But here is my guaranteed inheritance. Those are the spending segmented approaches that I tend to favor, and that those are invested based on the risk capacity of that spending. So it's close to what they were saying, match the type of income to the type of spending. I say match the investment to the type of spending. Spending segmented investing. If you are, say, 63 and retired, and you're going to allocate $800,000 to your buffer and your long-term care. Remember, we combine them now because they're invested similarly, but also it was a little bit silly to say, oh, you want to put $200,000 in your emergency reserve and $600,000 in your aging and LTC, as if we were going to tell you if you spend all $600,000 on aging and LTC, oh, you can't take that last $200,000. No, it wasn't for aging. This was for other emergencies, or vice versa, that you were going to spend that $200,000 on a medical emergency or some type of emergency maybe a family member was having, and then say, nope, you can't take that 600,000 aging reserve. That is for a different need. So we didn't see a purpose anymore for keeping those separate. But anyways, if you're 62 or 63, that buffer and reserve for aging and emergencies, we might put very, very little of an $800,000 position. We might put $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in a 100% buffer ETF for complete flexibility, but the rest invest. Why? Because most people are going to need aging and LTC in their 80s. And if there was an unplanned emergency, my roof blew off, my heating system just blew up. You've got plenty of that early in retirement. You've got plenty of liquidity if you believe in our positioning approach. I have plenty of liquidity in your go-go reserve. I can guarantee that you can cover that emergency, and I'll replace it at a more opportune time if something happened, some emergency happened while your portfolio was down. So that's similar to that sentence, match the type of income to the type of spending. We would say match the type of investment to the type of spending. Okay, next sentence I think Chris and I would agree with. Use guaranteed income for essentials. They call it essentials. Many people call them required. We call them minimum dignity floor. I love that. We would call it secure income, not necessarily guaranteed income, but that's just potato, potato. But I like that sentence. So I assume you do as well, Chris.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Then they say use conservative investments for flexible spending. At face value, I have nothing wrong with that. But when they started giving their examples of putting your money in TIP bonds and selling them if need be, I maybe not. Again, that can go either way. It's just that, as you know, if interest rates go down, the price of those bonds, interest rates go up rather, price of those bonds could go down, and it could lend itself to an inopportune sale. And I still believe that fun needs to be go-go fun. Slow-go and no-go can be invested, but go-go fun, I do feel, needs a degree of principal protection, because the whole point of this isolated positions, especially with fun, is to show you when your long-term aging and buffer is down, and it will be if you invest it based on risk tolerance in the hypothetical example I'm giving. If that is down, if the economy is down, the investments are down, just some volatility around, the emotional peace of mind to be able to look at your go-go fund reserves and see, ah, goodness, I have a degree of principal protection across the board. I'm not down at all. I could still go spend on fun. That emotional safety net is crucial, because we see constantly, and you all listening, you know this is going to be you, some more than others. When you retire, it's going to freak you out. And when you watch your portfolio go down, especially as a VG-er, you Vanguard engineer type personalities, you spend your whole career growing wealth. You're loath to spend it. It goes against your norm. It's like a cat sleeping with a dog. It just doesn't make sense. Why would you do that? Can't work. That's wrong. You don't, and I meant sleeping platonically as friends in a little bed, not the other way. It goes against your grain. And you would refuse to spend your money. And you might miss out on your go-go years. So do not underappreciate the emotional protection that giving a degree of principal protection to your fun money, and how important that is. And you might lose that, even in a quote-unquote conservative investment. Don't believe me? 2022, bonds took it on the chin. especially tips, especially longer duration tips, on the chin. And that could keep you from spending on fun. And I don't know for how long, until you felt comfortable again. And then maybe it's too late. And that, to me, is too big a risk to carry. For what? To earn an extra couple of percentage points? If you have to fund your fun spending by trying to earn some type of aggressive growth on it, or you can't do it, maybe you shouldn't have retired to begin with. That might be a slap in the face, but it could be the truth. You either have the money at this phase of your life or you don't. Today in our group meeting, Chris, we always meet on Tuesday as a group. Jake said, don't say the person, but we were prepping for a planned delivery. And remember when Jake said, you already won. Why take the risk? You remember that, Chris?
I do. It's just a couple hours ago.
Yeah. In what context was Jake saying that? Because it ties into what I'm saying.
That as accumulators, they had done a really good job and had amassed a substantial amount of money that based on their lifestyle, they're likely never to even come close to spending. So what that grants you essentially is the luxury of not having to reach for return, which is another way of saying you don't have to expose yourself to undue risk. Because as most people realize over time, that the way to be rewarded with market returns is to be willing to take risks. And once you've kind of won the game, you've got more than you could ever spend, then unless you're just a habitual accumulator and you've got to die with the most possible, that would change your outlook, of course. But if that's not you and you finally realize, you look yourself in the mirror and say, I've got plenty. I could keep my money, you know, in a box under my bed. Now, I'm not promoting that as a choice. I'm just saying, you know, once you have enough, you don't need the return piece anymore. You've got enough principal that you can accomplish everything you ever dreamed in life and then some. You've won the game at that point as far as the risk return game.
Exactly. So it's just funny that Jake said when he meets with these people and delivers their plan, he's going to tell them, you already won the game. Why take the risk? Because emotionally, even though you can afford it, if you saw your fun money dropping, you might not want to spend it. I know you VGers, you all are smiling, though you know many, many of you fall into that category. You're just loath to spend your money. Or it's just going to freak you out. And it's going to freak me out. I freely admitted that. When I stop working and drawing my salary, it'll freak me out. And I do this for a living. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's continue with what they say. They said this approach, remember the approach of using guaranteed income for essentials, conservative investments for flexible spending, I already shared my thoughts on that, and this one I just flat out disagree with, risky assets for discretionary goals. I don't know how you can tie that into a retirement plan, which only has a 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 year tops time frame, and that's not 30 years of beautiful health. It's probably only 6, 8, 10, 12 years of truly beautiful health. We have the health inclination, desire, and ability to truly do what you want to do, truly pursue your passions, especially if you retire around 65-ish, which is the quintessential, quote-unquote, retirement age. You don't have a whole hell of a lot of time to do that. To tie a discretionary goal? I don't want to maybe go elk hunting or have a garden or go salmon fishing or travel if I ever meet someone and she wants to travel. I don't want to maybe do it while the good Lord allows me to live a few more years on this earth. I want to do it. Why would I put those dollars at risk? I just don't get it. But anyways, I digress. That's their approach. They say this approach gives you peace of mind that your needs are covered. We definitely agree on the first part. Cover your, they call it essential, we call it minimum dignity floor. With guaranteed income, we call it secure income. Chris and I see eye to eye on that one. Number two, gives you flexibility to respond to life changes. To a degree, theirs does, but if everything is tied to income, you don't have that ability to do one big spend in a given year at any time you desire. I don't, that to me is inflexible. And then it says this also will give you a structure that aligns money with meaning. I have no idea what that means. That's getting a little bit too deep in the weeds. I don't deal with that. I have no idea. Do you have any idea what that means, where the structure that aligns with money and meaning?
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, they didn't really address that. They threw that out. And no. I'm not sure they talked about that in the article. Sounds fancy.
It does. They call it financial life planning, and I call it touchy-feely granola, crunchy munchy granola, touchy-feely. It's kind of that approach. And you're supposed to ask people, what does money mean to you? If somebody ever asked me that question, I'd probably walk out of the room. What do you mean, what does it mean to me? It means the same thing to me as it does to everyone. It's a means of supporting, and it's an end to a means. It gives me the ability to structure my life the way I see fit. What does that and 50 cents have to do with a cup of tea in China? Who knows? Then it gets into a little ad for their software. And I believe their software does income planning. And that's why everything is revolving around income. Because it says, are you ready to build a retirement income plan? So there's nothing wrong with income, but I think income should be used, secure income as we define it, for minimum dignity floor, and it should be limited to Social Security, pension, income annuity, to a lesser extent, royalty payments, rental income. We would concede that that exists. We're not going to get deep into how we treat it, but we would put that in the income category, definitely, with some caveats. But to me, the remaining expenses should be covered more flexible than the dogmatic limitations of income or aggressive investments. They should be positioned. That's my say. Chris, you can wrap this up. I think we beat this horse to death. It was a good article. I think hopefully people learned from it. And I would put this more in the dialogue category that, hey, here's someone else's approach, Mr. I don't know if it's a gentleman named Bolden who started the software firm or however they named it. And I support much of what they're saying, but not all of it. But that's what makes it great, because I can guarantee you there's advisors who listen to us. And I'm sure there's many who like what we do and many who disagree with our approach. And they have their own approach. There's no right or wrong approach. It's whatever works for you. And if approach A, approach B, approach C, or our approach works for you, that's a success. Chris and I freely tell people, not necessarily freely, but we do freely, we don't charge for the podcast, but we regularly tell people our approach to retirement planning is what, Chris?
One of many. Well, I guess would be the short way of saying it.
One of many, not for everyone. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of paths to the same destination, and anybody who says our way is the only way and that's the way you should do it isn't being intellectually honest. I think there's a lot of ways to have a successful and happy retirement, which is the goal, right? Make it work and be happy while doing it. That's pretty much what you can ask for. The one thing I want to, I guess, commend Robert Merton for doing is, I think, being such a high-level academic, they don't often talk about topics that are directly applicable to mainstream. And I think he's actually attempting, because this isn't the first time that he's participated in a discussion like this. There's been other articles where he's talked about his philosophy on this. And I think it is somewhat practical. And for him to, you know, draw people's attention, it isn't what you've amassed. The big pool of assets are hard to translate into what it can do for you. Let's start looking at things like, you know, income to protect your essentials. How are we going to allocate some of those assets for our wants and maybe our wishes and other reserves that we might have? So I think he's actually talking in fairly practical terms, for such an academic. So, you know, thanks for him putting his thoughts out there. That doesn't always happen.
I agree. And thanks for Bolden for providing this. And for those who like an income focused approach, again, I don't know their software. You might want to check them out. And again, we wanted to dissect this article because there's things we support and agree with, and there's things we don't support and agree with. But it doesn't mean we're right and they're wrong, or they're wrong and we're right. But I say that.
Well, either way,
we get that part right.
Either way, we end up being right. Right.
Oh. So. Heads I win, tails you lose.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not the way I meant it, folks.
Oh, everybody knew that.
You know what I meant, but it's not what I said. It's the way I talk. Yeah. All right. But anyways, I don't want anybody to think we're disparaging Mr. Merton or Bolden's article. We agree with some. We disagree with some. It's a dialogue. It's a talk. And it's hopefully giving you food for thought. You might like some of the way we approach retirement planning, some of the way Bolden and Merton were espousing it, and maybe some of a guardrail, a safe withdrawal rate. And you're going to coddle that together like a Frankenstein retirement plan and cobble it together and have something that works beautiful for you. Just try to have a plan and approach retirement very pragmatically. And just, it's going to be tough. It's going to freak you out. And I just feel having a plan, whether it's ours or someone else's or a conglomerate of many different approaches, having something I think can help give you an emotional crutch to take that big leap, because it can be scary. We know that because people share that with us all the time. And as I get older and older, I know it's going to concern and freak me out as well. I just got to find a good retirement planning firm to use. You know of one, Chris, that I might be able to use to help?
We might have to do some research. You might listen to some podcasts and see if anything
Maybe I'll ask ChatGPT, see what they say.
Yeah, sounds good.
Oh, I got a thing, and we'll talk about it later. A podcast listener from Florida. Oh, my God, I should send it to you. He was actually yelling at Chat. It was hilarious. Chat was hallucinating big time on the OBA, beautiful Bill Act, and just getting so much wrong. And the guy was just tearing into him. And you know how Chat is ridiculous. And, oh, you're right. I apologize. And then it would just turn around and say something else that's wrong. Anyways, he sent it to me. I'm not going to read the whole transcript because it's long. But he wanted it as a warning that y'all have to be careful. Don't rely blindly on Chat. We used it here to play against Chris, but
it does pretty well on state trivia.
It did
pretty well on that
state trivia
interpretation of laws and tax code.
Not so much. But I did share with him. I wrote back to him, and I don't know if he's going to try it. I told him use the deep search feature. If you have the $20 a month or the free one, I don't know if you get it at all. But in the $20 a month, when they give you 10 deep searches a month, use those. It is night and day. And I would be surprised if the deep search and a very well-worded prompt telling it exactly what you're looking for and what you want it to divine from the OBA. I told him I think the results would be much different than what you got. And I don't know if he used the free version or what, but it was funny. He sent it to me yesterday or the day before. I was appalled when I was reading it. I was like, oh my God. But then he's yelling at it with swear words. He's going into it with them. It was cute. But anyways, I just figured I'd share that.
Yeah. I'll say one last thing before we sign off. I was having a similar battle with AI, and my daughter was sitting next to me. She got mad at me for being mean to AI because I was not, after it was not responding the way it should, I was kind of ridiculing it. And I didn't call it nasty names or anything like that, but I wasn't being very nice. And she said, well, you should be nicer. To a machine? I mean, I guess the only argument is if the machines become sentient and take over our lives and they have a memory of being mean to them in the past, I guess that's as good an argument as anything to be nice to AI, because maybe they'll come back and be your master someday. But otherwise, it's a machine, right? I just thought it was funny that...
Did you apologize to it?
I asked her if I should apologize to it, and she just huffed and puffed and walked off. So I didn't, no, but...
I think that's a generational thing. She's, what, 17?
Yeah, yeah.
So to her, it's probably much more real than it is to you. And she probably does think you hurt its feelings.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would also make the argument that there, it's self-deprecating apologies are insincere, which is what makes me be less nice. For just like I would it's be to a human that is not sincerely apologetic. There, this knee-jerk where it apologizes and talks about how it failed and stuff like this. That's just some human who's told it to behave that way. It doesn't really feel that at all. It is not sorry.
Not at all.
It's not sorry.
But not only that, it's gratuitous, constantly praising you.
Yeah.
Every time I ask it a follow-up question, if I'm using it for something.
I know.
Oh, Jim, that is a brilliant question. It's great that you thought of it that way.
It's ridiculous.
You are tracking exactly this. You are an expert. Let's get in. It's just, oh, shut the hell up. Stop brown-nosing me.
Exactly.
Patronizing me. Yes, that's a better way of putting it. But no, I agree with that. Anyways, folks, if you haven't played with it, you definitely should. But as this man pointed out, don't rely on it. And if you are going to ask for something on Oba, do the deep, if you're using chat. I don't know how it works in Gronk or in Gemini or in Copilot. But I know in chat, you get 10. I have the $200 a month subscription, so I get $250 a month. But use the deep search feature. You will be amazed at how much more thorough it is. Because the answer doesn't come instant. It takes minutes. Sometimes 3, 4, 8, 10, 12, 15. It depends. So you will be amazed at how deep it goes and the forethought it puts into it. And I think if he did that, he'd have got far better advice. It was hilarious what it was saying was in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I think it would have been a lot more accurate than what it did. All right, I digress.
So thanks everybody for listening, and stay safe out there, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.